Hello and welcome to the Film Fringe Podcast, Episode 2, 2014, The Future Is Now. My name is Matthew McCrary.
And I'm Keith Burton.
Sweet. Alright, so today we're going to be talking about a few different things. First off, we'll be discussing Zero Charisma.
Zero Charisma.
A film shot here in Austin.
We're also going to touch on upcoming movies in 2014. And we're also going to review There Will Be Blood.
Alright, so first we'll do a review of the 2013 film Zero Charisma, which is shot here in Austin.
Yep.
So it's a film about a character named Scott, who is a role-playing game master, right?
Yeah, he's a dungeon master, our GM game master. Mm-hmm. It was shot here in Austin and with a bunch of local Austin indie people. A lot of improv people, too. So just a quick overview. What did you think of the film?
I liked it, man. I thought it was really good. I think that I guess my only problem with the film is that I do feel like I was coming at it with a certain sense of they can only do so much with the budget and things like that. So I do feel like I was sort of giving it the benefit of the doubt sometimes rather than just taking it on its own merit as just a film and comparing it to something like, you know, a Terrence Malick film or whatever it happens to be. Yeah. My favorite film of the last year, Spring Breakers, or whatever it happens to be. So I guess there's that issue, but I thoroughly enjoyed it at the very least. What'd you think?
Yeah, I feel like for the budget, $25,000, like that's all they spent.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for the budget, that's the most you can squeeze out of it. I had some minor issues, like some of the pacing and acting.
Yeah, I thought the pacing was kind of off sometimes too.
I felt like they lingered on scenes a little bit too long. They didn't cut quick enough. And some of the acting felt overacted. Mm-hmm. A little bit, but other than that, the script I think was really well done. It hit all the major plot points. It had three act structure.
Mm-hmm.
It had good written dialogue. I could tell that somebody really spent time on the script.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the actors and actresses were great. Nana, the grandmother,
mm-hmm.
She was great. Miles, the hipster dude, his girlfriend,
yeah,
really good.
Was good.
Yeah, and Scott, the main guy.
Uh-huh.
Scott, the main guy, did you have any issues with his acting, or what'd you think?
No, I thought he did a good job. I think he played what the character needed, and one thing I liked about the film is that I think there's definitely that feeling of, these dudes are nerds, but I think it's more loving than something like The Big Bang Theory. I don't think that it's us on the outside looking in. I think it's us being brought into the circle and seeing what it's like to be a part of this group. You judge Scott for his decisions, and he's so wrapped up in his own world, but you almost see why he would be wrapped up in his own world.
Yeah.
And the things he's escaping from, you know, his childhood with his mother and things like that, as to why he's put so much interest and love into being a game master. I keep thinking I'm singing wrong.
Yeah, game masters are right. Yeah, okay. The family stuff is definitely the reason for some of his actions.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, the dude is an asshole.
Yeah, he's definitely an asshole.
he's
taking things too far. He's taking it
too far
to the next level. Yeah,
that's what makes him an interesting character. Mm-hmm. He is definitely a jerk to both the hipster guy, to his friends, and some of the performance I bought totally, and I was with it. Some of the performance I was it feels a little bit overwrought, but I didn't know if that was a problem with maybe not being used to performing a feature length. I don't know if this guy's done feature lengths before, but it's some of it felt kind of hit and miss, but I don't know. I still enjoyed the movie overall. I thought it was pretty good, and it's funny. Some of the weirdest thing, do you remember the popping zit thing?
That was borderline disturbing.
Yeah, I was is he about to rape his friend?
It was very rapey. Yeah,
it was so rapey, sure. And then he takes the tissue and wipes his hand, and I was I feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that was sort of the point, but it did seem a little bit...
Yeah.
I got the idea that he was extremely dominant over his friend without needing that scene, and it made me feel a little bit more uncomfortable than I would have liked to have felt, you know?
I just wondered if the subtext was if he's bi or gay, does he have attraction towards his friend? And that's how he manifests it? But then he has the attraction to the girlfriend of Miles.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if there's a gay subtext. I think they were just sort of pushing the idea that Scott has this this control over his best friend.
Yeah, I don't remember. He was a good actor. I mean, for
I actually thought everyone did a good job. Yeah, I think the only person I had an issue with, and they were only in it for a few seconds, was the guy at the very beginning who leaves to go be with his wife, I guess.
Yeah.
That was, that sort of left the first 10 minutes feeling kind of rocky for me.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't really buy it. I thought that it was rushed a lot. Like,
yeah,
getting to that point of where this guy's leaving the group felt super rushed. It didn't feel like natural and organic.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think that his acting was really the best. Like, no offense to the guy, but
yeah,
I thought everyone else did a really good job. Especially the grandmother, which I think you were a big fan of, and the mother too, which I feel like I've actually seen her before, the mother.
The mother's down on my list as far as
yeah,
who I enjoyed. Yeah, I mean, her character was interesting, and it served
mm-hmm,
the
yeah,
plot.
For sure.
I felt like I would have watched a whole movie about that grandmother. Like, she was just a
yeah,
really good actress.
Yeah, she's. I think her and Scott and Miles, the hipster
yeah,
antagonist, I guess you could call him, were the three best parts for me, which worked out since they're pretty much the three main characters, the three people who get the most screen time.
Yeah.
Besides the best friend.
I mean, do you feel like that the movie portrayed both subcultures accurately? Like, how do you feel about how they portrayed hipsters? I mean, because at the end of the day, like, all the hipsters are douchey, but they're understandable, but they're still kind of presented douchey.
Yeah, I think that they portrayed the hipsters as a little bit more mean-spirited than the people that I've met. I don't know if they would do that to the point where, I mean, they're pretty much making fun of this guy and how, they're pretty much making fun of Scott and how into his role-playing stuff he's into, you know.
But they're into their own subculture, like, so hardcore. They're basically nerds about a different thing.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was really my only issue with the way that they were portraying hipsters. I think Miles is kind of a jerk, but, you know, he doesn't really have any reason for doing what he's doing, except maybe some sort of journalistic reasons, because he does work for, like, a geek website, right?
Yeah.
But they don't really ever implicitly say that,
yeah,
so we don't know that that's for sure why he's decided to get, like, you know, kind of sneak his way into this group of role-playing guys and sort of take over Scott's role as the game master.
The four of you have just reached the entrance to the cave of Drakanor. Your dwarf guide tells you he cannot let you proceed. This place is sacred.
I'll handle this. My good friend, I have lived in these mountains all my life. I have as much of a right to enter the cave of Drakanor as any man.
You cannot fool me. You are a tourist here. You think you can come and go as you please. But the natives of the Ungar Mountains do not take kindly to interlopers.
Perhaps you are right. But I am also powerful. You would be wise to not challenge me.
Shit. Sorry.
I guess that's topical with hipster subcultures. Like, people are always suspicious. Like, are these hipsters doing that because they like it? Or because
they're
just trying to be ironic or whatever? But
yeah, and I kind of wish... I mean, I realize that Scott isn't... not Scott. I realize that Miles isn't the main character, but I feel like that could have been touched on a little bit more as the whole culture of irony. You never really know if Miles' intentions are ironic. You know that he doesn't have the best intentions because he doesn't care that much about his friendship with these guys.
Yeah.
But there's not really... I don't need them to come out and say it to me. I just don't think that it was an interest of the writers, Miles' intentions for being a part of the group.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because it seemed at one point like Miles was really interested in his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, he doesn't invite him to a party.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want to, like, bring together the hipster subculture and the nerd subculture.
Mm-hmm.
And so they keep him separated. And I just wonder, like, I don't know. I don't know what Miles was thinking. I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. Like, maybe it makes it more interesting that way. But
mm-hmm.
I thought his girlfriend, Miles' girlfriend, was a great actress. Like,
mm-hmm.
for what little scene time she had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the hand part where she's, like, seducing Scott a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I thought that was really well done. I mean, it's hokey, but it was well done.
Yeah, I guess I thought that was a little bit over the top. I don't know if that would necessarily really happen.
Probably not. Yeah, I mean,
like, but it was an interesting character that, that would do that sort of thing. That's for sure.
I don't know if she would really like nerds like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But going back to Miles' intentions, there is that scene where they're having a discussion about how he wants to host two of Scott's friends' web series, I guess, on his website.
Yeah.
And you'd never really know if he legitimately likes it or if it's an ironic thing for him. Scott seems to think it's an ironic thing.
Yeah.
But we never know for sure, and I just kind of wish that they would have, I don't know, I guess put it up a little bit more, point us emotionally in the right direction of what we're supposed to expect. But honestly, it's not Miles' movie, it's Scott's movie, so that's not really pertinent, I guess, in the long run.
And it's interesting, like, I just wonder what the message is the film is trying to convey. I think maybe it might be the speaker, Greg Gordon, like, what he was saying is, like, it's just a game at the end of the day, don't let it overwhelm your life kind of thing. And that was pretty well done, that part. But who do we want Scott to become, and who does Scott want to become? Like,
well, I think that's what's interesting about the end of the film, and this is getting into a spoiler here, but you know, at the end of the film, I think that it's breaking with classic Hollywood expectations of the hero being or not the hero, but the protagonist being fixed by the end of the film, or you know, having for the protagonist to be the expectations that we have of them, which is to basically be a normal citizen and to be courteous to other people, things like this. I think that it did a really good job of mixing the two. It gave us the happy ending of he's learned something, but he hates it still. You know what I mean? So his character hasn't necessarily changed. His desires haven't changed, but he understands now that he has to be able to have a little bit of wiggle room in order to be accepted into society a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's what I really liked about the film, is that he doesn't have like this, you know, moment of great analysis of himself where he realizes all the things wrong with him. You know, it's more just like, well, I don't think it's wrong, but some other people do, so I have to kind of bend to their will a little bit.
Yeah.
And I liked it a lot.
I respected that. That was good. I just don't know how much time in the future I'd want to spend with Scott. Like, I feel like I enjoyed spending time with him in the movie, but the future Scott, I would not want to hang out with that guy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he just seems like at the end of the day, he's still got a lot of problems to work out. Like,
yes.
And one thing that I was curious about is, did you believe the crying scene in the bathroom?
Completely spacing on that part.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, that was one of the acting moments I was like, because it's really hard to cry on camera.
Yeah.
To make it believable. And I felt like the actor did an okay job, but it seemed like a little bit hokey, and it was just kind of like kind of thing. I don't know, that was a minor
what was the reason, like what led up to the crying scene?
It was just him breaking down. Like, he had what, like 3 or 4 breakdowns during the movie at the end. It was just one of the breakdowns in the beginning. He just went to the bathroom and cried a little bit.
But speaking of him blowing up, I think that scene was really well done where he goes to the hipster party and he just totally ruins the entire party. I think that that did capture the hipster culture really well, and the fact that, you know, Miles' friends are just kind of escalating things just almost to see some sort of human emotion, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because just
this guy is so worked up, and he has so much raw emotion that's, like, interesting to them. They're also all drunk, of course. So that doesn't help things, but...
Yeah. That's the thing, I guess, they wanted to comment about hipster culture, is that people who take themselves that seriously and that intense, they're like a weird specimen to hipster culture. They're like, look at that person taking that thing so seriously. We don't take that seriously.
Yeah. We're all disconnected from things,
and above that,
So. I think so. But I thought it was pretty well done. And I really liked his relationship with his grandma, which I think we mentioned some.
Yeah, that's, you don't see that a lot in movies.
He did have a strong relationship with her, but it was a very honest relationship where there was very much like a leech sort of situation going on, where he's leeching off his grandma to a degree. And she, you know, he seemed to think that he's doing things for her, but he's actually not really helping her out that much.
And she finally calls him on his shit, which was great.
Just the level of honesty that those characters had towards one another. It seemed like he cared more about getting the house than he did being with his grandma. Or at least outwardly, that's what he spoke about. But you have to wonder if she's not some kind of rock for him, even though he has, you know, arguments with her and she annoys him and things like that.
I mean, he's obviously working at the place where she moved to, so...
Yeah, so he must have some kind of connection to her.
Yeah, I feel like he cares, but I feel like the character is still too much of a jerk to really realize how he should be loving his grandmother.
Yeah. How he should act to other people.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a question. It's like, does the character ever learn to treat other people that he should treat them? I don't know if he does, but I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Would you recommend it?
Yeah, I'd recommend it. Also, just a shout out, a guy I work with, Vincent Pendergrass. He was one of the friends in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Vincent's a cool guy, and just want to give a little shout out.
Good job, Vincent.
Yeah, thanks for turning me on to the movie. As like he had mentioned to it, to the movie to me before we reviewed it, and I was gonna see it in theaters, missed out because I had a sick day, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's good thing to see. Go check it out.
Yeah, definitely. I caught this one on the Dissolves. they did the best movies of 2013 that were made under $100,000, and it ended up on there. So that's what pointed me to it. And then we checked it out. I think you can find it on Hulu
and iTunes also.
And iTunes, okay, yeah. And maybe a few other services, possibly Vimeo. Do you? Yeah.
Don't do the Pirate Bay. No.
Yeah, don't do that one. I don't know what's on there, Keith.
Yeah, what's the Pirate Bay? I don't know what that is.
Okay, so that's Zero Charisma. It came out this year, and you should be able to find it on Hulu, or you said iTunes?
Yeah, iTunes.
Cool, sounds good. After this short break, we'll be discussing There Will Be Blood. You're listening to EG with We Don't Ask Anymore. You can check out their music at ijiiji.bandcamp.com. Can I make a retraction, or is it out there for good? It is a question you've been hiding, hoping you'll never hear it again. But we don't ask anymore of our... Alright, so we're going to do a quick review of There Will Be Blood, which is Paul Thomas Anderson's 2008 film. This is sort of looking forward to... fact that he has Inherent Vice coming out later this year. We wanted to jump on one of his older movies. This is one that I hadn't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw it for the first time about a week or so ago. Keith, you want to give us a rundown on what the film's about?
It's not easy.
It's about a lot of things.
It's basically about Daniel Plainview, and he's a gold miner / oil prospector, I guess you'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he basically stumbles upon a small town that's a very religious community, and he tries to get oil from that community, and it just progresses as how he discovers oil, what happens to his character when he gets rich, and his interactions with...
Paul Dano's character.
Yeah, Paul Dano's. Basically, there's a religious leader that's very young in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about his interactions with him. And it's one of my favorite movies. Like, it's got to at least be in my top 10. And the reason I love it so much is because I think it has a lot to say about capitalism, about religion. We'll get into all that. But.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just... initial impression, like overall, did you like the movie? Did you feel it was too long? Like, what's your summary of it?
I liked the movie. I went into it with certain expectations, hearing that it was the best Paul Thomas Anderson film, and I'm not sure if I agree with that, but it's definitely a really good movie. I'm looking forward to watching it again because there's so much to unpack with that film.
Yeah.
But no, I really liked it. I thought that there's so many great things to mention about it, from the performances to what Paul Thomas Anderson's doing, to the cinematography, which is done by Robert Elswit, the music by Johnny Greenwood,
mm-hmm.
And going off the music, a lot of the sound design, just like the opening scene with the mountains, right?
Yeah.
It has the mountains and there's like that.
Yeah.
Like it's just creepy. and then also the kind of pounding drums during the scene where Daniel Plainview's son gets hit by the oil.
Yeah.
I just feel like the music and the sound design plays such a big, important part in the film. And I thought it was so well done.
Yeah.
So it's probably a masterpiece. It's just, I don't know if it met the expectations that I had going into it, but it's an amazing film, yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk real quick about that opening. Like, I love the way he opened the movie because... I guess if you see a title like There Will Be Blood and it's directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, you're like, is this going to be violent action? What's going to happen? You don't know. So I remember being in theaters watching this movie open. I was like, okay, so there's this guy, and there's no music outside of that haunting room. Mm-hmm. It's totally dead quiet. It's just the sounds of him going into that cave and just basically like prospecting. And it's just
pretty old, yeah.
It was like 10, 15 minutes or something like
there's
that.
There's about 10 minutes of silence, yeah. Or, you know, script silence where there's no dialogue being spoken, yeah.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is it says everything about Daniel with no dialogue in that first 10 minutes. Like, here's a guy who is obviously working very hard. He gets damaged, and he still continues to go. Like, no matter, like, he falls basically down that well. He falls on his back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he gets damaged, wind knocked out of him. Like, here's a guy who's hurt, but he's still going to keep going, and nothing's going to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets what he wants at the end of the day, but is that worth it?
You know? Yeah, at what cost?
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect way to set up the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it is kind of a nice precursor to the rest of this, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, if he'd just gone down there, found gold, and nothing happened to him, you know, it would have set up the expectation that this guy is, like, absurdly dedicated to what he's doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, because he hurts himself, and he basically, I mean, he doesn't necessarily physically shake it off, but he emotionally shakes it off and just, you know, climbs back up on the horse, as some would say.
Yeah.
Just keeps going with it.
Man, that is, like, the most tragic, one of the most tragic parts of the movie for me is his relationship with his son.
Yeah.
Is just terrible. Like, I mean, he obviously loves the kid, and but
wait, isn't that how dads treat sons?
Yeah, I mean, he loves the kid, but he lets his work damage his kid and get in the way of truly loving him.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I think that's, again, what happens with other characters and throughout the whole movie. Like, his work and his desire for wealth damages people, and it stands in the way of him connecting.
Mm-hmm. It's like the most important thing for him, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Daniel, if not a sociopath, does not like humans at all. Like,
he even says that in the movie.
He says
that
he does not like humans, and he sees them as getting in the way. They're greedy, they're selfish, they're terrible.
They're below him, pretty much.
And he just wants wealth to be by himself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, so, I mean, thoughts on when it transitioned from those scenes and it gets to the community where there's a church, and how did you feel about all that?
I really thought it was interesting, the juxtaposition of the church, which is run by Paul Dano's character, who is named Paul Sunday, or I guess Eli Sunday is the one who runs the church. And I just thought that Paul Thomas Anderson was kind of quietly pointing out the similarities between Eli and Daniel Plainview, and the fact that in a lot of ways they're not that different, what they're trying to do. They're both kind of hucksters in certain ways, in order to meet the end goal of themselves.
Yeah.
And at the end of the film, I feel like the movie's really about, or I think one thing the film could be seen as being about is the transition of power in this time period, which is the late 1800s, from the church being basically having control over society to industry having control over society and starting to make decisions about the way that society will go.
Mm-hmm.
And the church largely being taken out of that equation in a lot of ways. And obviously there are plenty of people who come to Eli's church and are extremely impacted by what he's doing, and they believe him, and some of them are kind of crazy. But I feel like in general, there are way more people who are going the route of Daniel Plainview in industry.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, not to spoil the last scene, but I think that's very like on the nose, you know, what he's doing there. I think it's metaphorically crushing religion and killing religion, you know, in the name of industry.
And I mean, I'm gonna go ahead and spoil Annie, so sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
But
spoiler.
I think what's interesting is Daniel Plainview is totally honest. Well, he's honest about his intentions, like, he does kind of deceive the town a little bit about what he does as far as long term, but he's honest that he wants oil. He's there to get oil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he wants at the end of the day. And the Eli character is deceptive about what he wants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he plays the crowd. He tries to get converts. He does the religious stuff. And there's a suspicion at the end of the day, like, does Eli ever really believe this, or is he just using it to get money, to get notoriety? And I wonder if that's what Paul Thomas Anderson is saying, is that Daniel is honest about what he wants, but it makes him an evil person. Eli is not honest about it, helps the community, but is doing it for terrible reasons.
Daniel, though, he does have that scene where he has, like, sort of the groundbreaking for the oil rig, right?
Yeah.
And that's a little deceptive. I mean, he brings the entire town there, like, it's this awesome thing, and he's doing this great thing for them.
Yeah.
I guess the question you ask yourself is, does Daniel Plainview believe that he is doing something good for them?
No.
And I don't think he is.
No, he's...
With the drink your milkshake thing and things like that.
I guess they're similar in that way, but maybe it's just because Eli's a little bit better at deceiving crowds. Like,
mm-hmm.
the town is still suspicious of Daniel. Like,
that's true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of them really buy into it.
I'm an oil man. Ladies and gentlemen. Numerous concerns spread across this state. I have many wells flowing at many thousand barrels per day. I like to think of myself as an oil man. As an oil man, I hope that you'll forgive just good old-fashioned plain speaking. Now, this work that we do is very much a family enterprise. I work side by side with my wonderful son, H.W. I think one or two of you might have met him already. I encourage my men to bring their families as well. Makes for an ever so much more rewarding life for them. Family means children, and children means education. So wherever we set up camp, education is a necessity, and we're just so happy to take care of that. So let's build a wonderful school in Little Boston. These children are the future that we strive for, and so they should have the very best of things. Now, something else, and please don't be insulted if I speak about this. Bread. Let's talk about bread. In my mind, it's an abomination to consider that any man, woman, or child in this magnificent country of ours should have to look upon a loaf of bread as a luxury. We're going to dig water wells here, and water wells means irrigation. Irrigation means cultivation. We're going to raise crops here where before it just simply wasn't possible. You're going to have more grain than you know what to do with. Bread will be coming right out of your ears, ma'am. New roads. Agriculture, employment, education. These are just a few of the things we can offer you. And I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that if we do find oil here, and I think there's a very good chance that we will, this community of yours will not only survive, it will flourish. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Yes?
Will the new road lead to the church?
Well, that'll be the first place that it leads. Thank you, Eli. Anyone else?
Another interesting thing in the movie is Daniel's relationship with a guy who claims to be his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's another thing with deception is here's this guy who finds out Daniel has money and claims to be his brother, and Daniel finds out. And one of my favorite parts in the movie is like them sitting on the beach and that slow realization that happens on Daniel Day-Lewis's face.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, he does this like second look and he's like, well... And you see his like mustache move, and he looks, and he's like, and you're like, oh, he knows.
Yeah, that's the moment.
And he kills him, and that's very capitalist of him.
Yeah.
At this point in our program, the lovely and exuberant Rachel Manning decided to join our lads in conversation.
I think the oil in the film is a metaphor for the darkness that is within him.
That could be true.
And I think it represents. The more oil he extracts, the farther he gets into the process, the more he hates himself and the more he hates everything around him. And I think that's what oil is supposed to be representative of.
That's interesting.
Sorry, I just
it's
worked, just that in my head.
No, that's good. That's good.
I think he's very self-loathing.
Uh-huh. So you think it's the worst, right, then, when the oil strikes and it's just like the geyser?
Yeah, I think that was the complete turning point in the
mm-hmm.
film.
Because
before then, he's very much, he could be like an anti-hero in the sense that you want to like him, you want to think that he's just doing something for himself, he's taking what's there for him, and then later you realize...
He's just a terrible person.
Yeah.
No, he's just as greedy as the next person, I think, and the power from what he has a grasp on corrupts him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing, is the fact that, like, in the 20s or the early...
Probably can't hear
no,
me
sit out. Down, yeah. See, Rachel is joining us. Real quick. Just for a second.
Okay.
Just for a second. But, like, in the early 1900s, or 20th century, like, these guys, the oil barons, had all that power for centered, like, one or two people or a big company, and should one or two people have that much power? Like, that's a lot of power.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And can you have that much and not be corrupted, I guess?
Yeah.
That's a good point. But.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I think that's possible. Because especially back then was something, we didn't really know back then what exactly oil could do for us. So
uh-huh.
I think the naivete also, from most people around him, probably strengthened like his ego and...
Yeah.
Like the darkening of his soul,
mm-hmm,
if
mm-hmm.
you believe in that sort of thing.
And I guess, should like one person have that much control over a church? I mean, like,
yeah,
that's a lot of power, too.
Yeah, I think that the religious young figure was supposed to be a juxtaposition to him.
Uh-huh, yeah.
For most of the film.
But going off what you were saying earlier, do you guys feel like at any point in time you had empathy or sympathy for Daniel Plainview?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like at the beginning of the film. I think you do empathize with him, where he's coming from.
Uh-huh.
He has that humanistic feeling to him, but by the end, actually,
he's dead inside.
No, even by the end, I mean, I felt for him. Like, what must he be going through?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think ultimately, it's something he did to himself.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that was one interesting thing. Is I think going into this, and maybe it was just things I'd heard about the movie, but I had this feeling that I was just going to be watching a film about this, like, awful, awful man who I was going to hate, and there would be no redeeming value.
No.
And so maybe it's just that expectation that I was surprised by the fact that I found scenes where I felt sorry for him. And I, for instance, the whole relationship with his brother, I mean, you can't say that he's evil because he is willing to accept this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it really is his brother, it would be hard with all that money to assume that his brother has entirely altruistic reasons to just show up out of nowhere, you know what I'm saying?
Even if that was his real brother, like, he'd probably still want to get money from him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But he still has a level of hope to want to bring him there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people seem to make this big to-do about how Daniel Plainview is using the son as a bargaining tool to say he has a family, which I think is true.
Yeah.
But I think he also loves the son.
Yeah.
mean...
I think his son was supposed to represent who he could be.
Yep.
Oh,
and,
I didn't know that, yeah.
The brother, the, you know, quote, brother that ended up coming around, I think that was another point in the film where, like, there was a darkening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
definitely.
He lied to him, and he actually told him, I don't remember the line exactly, but he said, I don't believe that there's really good in anybody, but I think
yeah.
he was projecting his own self-loathing onto someone else.
Yeah,
like,
oh, maybe, yeah.
This is something I'm not even sure if I think I'm good inside. How could I believe you are? You know?
Uh-huh, exactly.
But then he started to, and he took him everywhere with him, and then...
Let him down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I respect... I probably like Daniel more than I do Eli, like, a million
yes.
times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and... I mean... Daniel's fault is that he is not good with people. He doesn't love or trust people enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you can say that his fake brother let him down, and society kind of let him down. But I don't know. I mean, I just respect the fact that here's a guy who tried really hard and he got his money. Like, great. That's respectable. But it's on the backs of all these people. And,
mm-hmm,
like, on the back of a community that never gets money, never gets recognized, and... He abandoned them socially. So
mm-hmm.
It's still happening today.
Yeah.
Fracking. Taking away from...
Rachel, fracking is not...
Alright, we will go there.
A lot of people can make plenty of good money off of selling their land for fracking purposes.
Let's all watch the Matt Damon film.
At this point in our program, the lovely and exuberant Rachel Manning decided to leave our lads to their conversation.
So to wrap it up...
Yeah. I mean... The reason it's my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson film is I enjoyed Boogie Nights, and I feel like that had something to say about people. And Magnolia was obviously more dramatic and more serious, but I think this movie has more to say about people than those movies or The Master. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think this is what we see playing out over and over again in America is capitalism, religion, how much you connect with society, and how much of you, like, how much of you turns to self-loathing and mistrust of other people just because you're let down over and over.
So
I think that's probably the truest out of all his movies to me. But
you think it captures the what it is to be American more than anything else? Yeah,
I really feel it does. And I know that movie got hyped a lot, and you know, I went into it not really knowing anything about it, and since then I've just kind of ignored what other people said about it and just rewatched it over and over. And every time I'm like, I really connect with this movie again and again, so I think it's probably my favorite.
Yeah, it's just so well shot, man.
Yeah,
it's, I definitely want to rewatch it. But yeah, I think what's interesting about Paul Thomas Anderson is he is a very American director, and that he's not only American, obviously, but he's working in what it means to be an American and kind of what the weight on our shoulders of capitalism and you know what we're doing to the rest of the world and things like that, just the weight of the lifestyle that we're able to lead, things like that. I think he's interested in that kind of thing, and I think he handles it really well. From, you know, Boogie Nights to The Master to There Will Be Blood.
So, do you think The Master had as much or to say about society, or?
I feel like The Master is, the problem with The Master, right, is that it's one of those films that's, he made it in such a way that you could say, there's just so much to unpack about that movie, which is how I feel. I feel like there's too much for me to unpack.
Yeah.
And I need to, I mean, I saw it like a year ago now and I still don't quite understand the film.
Yeah.
So I could say that I think those things are in that film, but I can't rightly say it as much as I can for There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Where it's much more right there in front of you. Like you can't, he doesn't hit you over the head with it, but you can't really miss it either. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, if you're paying attention, those themes like keep coming at you.
Yeah. Yeah. In a way that I'm not sure that they are as obvious in The Master. But I think The Master is trying to do a lot of different things. I think The Master is more about, you know, what war and religion do to somebody instead of necessarily industry, right?
Yeah.
But it still has a lot to say about religion, which is interesting.
It's more of a cult. Well, I guess
yeah, it is more of a cult.
That's true. You think religion is a cult.
But in my opinion, what Eli does in this film isn't that far from what Philip Seymour Hoffman's character does. I can't remember what his name is in the movie.
Yeah.
But what he's doing in The Master, I think, is relatively similar in some ways, you know?
They're similar.
Basically, being hucksters, getting these people to believe them because they have these interesting ideals that draw people to them, you know?
Yeah. I guess the difference between The Master and Eli's character is that the religion in The Master is more sci-fi oriented. It's new in America. There's not a huge congregation of people that are buying into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Eli's religion is the majority. Like, most people are Christian. Maybe they're like a little bit like Southern sect, handling snakes, you know, speaking in tongues kind of thing, but they're still Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like Eli's religion is supposed to reflect the majority of American religion.
Yeah.
I can't talk.
No. So wait, real quick, while we're on that subject, did you like Paul Dano's performance in the film?
Who's bad with
he? Paul Dano played Eli. He's the minister.
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
No. I think he was perfect for the character, and I think he played a young, unsure of himself, conflicted. Mm-hmm. Over the top, like really young guy, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was good casting. There are some scenes that are uncomfortable or really weird, and you might say he's overacting, but I really think he's just being that character, and like that's how that kind of person would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm okay with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't decide if half the time I wanted to laugh at his performance, and the other half the time I was really frightened by him.
I think that's exactly what
he
was supposed to
do. I think he did a good job. I'm not sure.
Well, think about going to those kind of church services that are that extreme where people are speaking in tongues. You want to laugh and you're scared.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, like it would be a good mixture of the two.
Yeah, you're not sure how to take it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't believe in it, you're just like, what is going on? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
When we return from the short break, we'll be discussing our most anticipated films of 2014. Right now, you're listening to Mother Falcon with Faint Green Light. You can check out their music at motherfalconmusic.com.
talk about those 2014 movies. Keith, do you want to start us out with anything you're interested in?
Yeah, we got a big list here, so we're going to go kind of fast. I'm going to hit some of the action movies, like the Bro Dude action movies that are coming out that I want to see. Surprisingly, I'm not usually into Bro Dude action movies, but I'm excited for some of these. We've got Godzilla coming out with Bryan Cranston. Super excited about that. They pulled a director who's had a... I think he's only directed like two movies before, but...
Mm. But one of them's a movie called Monsters, which is... I don't know much about it, but I do know that it is a relatively low-budget monster movie, so it's good.
Yeah, it's got good critical acclaim, and he seems like a smart guy, so I'm excited. The trailer, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It doesn't spoil anything, and it's pretty intense. I liked it.
So does this one have Matthew Broderick in it?
I don't know. I didn't look. I don't remember the other cast.
I just want to see him back in the Godzilla movie again.
That would be amazing. Do you remember the elevator scene in the 90s Godzilla?
Do I? Yeah. No, what happened in the elevator scene?
Like, they're getting chased around. There were baby Godzillas, and they go into an elevator to escape, and then they open the elevator, and there's baby Godzillas that look at them, and like there's a popcorn bag they're eating or something. Something weird like that. It was just dumb. Anyway.
Wait. Okay, go ahead.
This is going to be better, hopefully. This will be better. So some other action ones. The Raid 2 has been getting a lot of buzz, and I'm excited for that. I did see the first one. It was okay. It's not a great movie, but this one is a new director and really exciting. Everybody says it's pretty awesome.
Word on the street is it's better than the first.
Yes. It were probably like 3-4 times better than the first. Some people are calling it the best action movie of all time. So,
bit of the old ultra-violence.
Ultra-violence. Another one is going to be like all the big-name directors that are famous now. Interstellar by Christopher Nolan. He's doing some kind of time travel wormhole thing. With a great cast. Matt hasn't memorized. Who is it?
It was Matthew McConaughey.
Uh-huh.
Casey Affleck. Affleck. The other Affleck, yeah. The better Affleck. Anne Hathaway and Jessica Chastain.
Yep. So, I mean, I'm not a huge Nolan fan. Like, I love a couple of his movies, but I'm curious to see what this is going to be. I'm waiting in suspicion. Yes. A couple other ones real quick. RoboCop, it's probably going to be a shit movie, but I'm, yeah, I mean, I've read so many things on RoboCop, and they could have done it perfectly, so from what I hear, just from a few reviews of people who've seen it, it's not as smart, it's not as satirical as the original. It tries to have a message, but we'll have to see if that delivers or not.
What's interesting about RoboCop is I saw that one for the first time, like, 2 or 3 years ago, so I don't have that, childhood and nostalgia, and I can still say it is a awesome movie. Like, yeah, it's amazingly good with what it's getting at, you know? It's just one of those films where it's, you watch it and something like this happens and you have to ask yourself, like, why are they...
Yeah.
What is the reason behind this besides making money? Like, there's no reason to remake this film. You could say that it's like the Dark Knight, like, darkism that's come over film, but the original RoboCop is super dark. Yeah. Like, you don't need to get darker than that. I don't understand.
I don't know if they could. I mean, they could go darker, but it would be absurdly dark at that point. But
be depressed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be suicidally dark.
That's kind of the criticism that got levied on the second and third RoboCop movies, is it turned into a commercial, like, lazy scripts. The satire was gone. The darkness was gone. It was like PG-13 or something.
True story, though. My communication teacher, my speech teacher in high school, was an extra in RoboCop 2.
Well, that makes it good, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's important to know, Keith.
Good to know.
Hollywood Info Insider.
I think that's all the big ones. Maybe, we'll talk about some of the lesser known.
I have a few big ones real quick.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
You didn't touch on any of the 3 Marvel films, which they don't have a good track record lately, because Iron Man 3, for instance, I'm sure you know how bad that movie was.
That was great.
but this summer, they have Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which is at least an interesting storyline. It's from the comics. I believe it's about 5 years ago or so. Ed Brubaker brought back one of the characters from the original Captain America origin story, and so that should be kind of interesting. And then X-Men Days of Future Past looks interesting, just because Bryan Singer's back after the last thing he had to do with X-Men, directorially at least, was X2, and that's really awesome in my opinion. And Days of Future Past looks interesting because they're tying together, like, this idea of this new set of films they've made with the old set of films.
Yeah.
So that should be kind of interesting.
Did you like the X-Men before this, the good like time period? What was it called?
Origins. X-Men.
Yeah, Origins. Yeah.
Anything that didn't have the children in it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So cut it down to like 30-minute, 45-minute long movie and I'm into it. But all the acting by any child actor, even just a girl, was terrible.
Wait, were we talking about the one where it was set in the 60s? Or
yeah, uh-huh.
You didn't like that? Or
No, it was terrible, dude. For me, obviously.
I mean, it was as smart as a dumb movie like that could be, I think. Like it.
Yeah, but all the smart parts were with the adults.
Yeah, and
Magneto and Charles Xavier.
Yeah, they had. I thought Jennifer Lawrence was good. I mean, no.
I'm shaking my head now.
Okay.
I guess you can't convey that audio leave.
They can't
no.
see that.
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. I gave maybe a little bit more credit than it's worth for the previous movie, but we'll see how it goes.
Are you into this one at all? Are you intrigued at all?
I'm curious. I mean, if it hits the same tone and pacing as that the one before it, then I'll probably be into it.
Cool. Lastly, from Marvel is Guardians of the Galaxy, which is interesting in my opinion, just because this is a series of characters that I don't think anyone really knows about. Have you ever heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy?
I have no clue what that is.
They're just kind of random characters that are part of the more galactic side of Marvel that doesn't get as much attention. But I'm interested just because it's the same director who did Slither and Super. Neither of which I've seen, honestly. But,
no, I haven't seen
it. But they come with pretty... I know Slither comes with good praise, and Super comes with sort of mixed criticism, but that's always interesting to me. So at least he's someone who's been doing interesting stuff, if nothing else.
How big are you into, like, Marvel and comic books and superhero movies?
You're
into it?
I'm super into Marvel comics, yeah, but, I mean, I feel like I have a critical eye towards the movies. I mean, obviously, in, like, Iron Man 3... So, but I don't really come at it from that fanboy angle. Like, I don't care if they change the color of Iron Man's suit or something. That didn't really matter to me. It's more just like, be true to the character, things like that. And so I guess that's what bothers me is when I don't feel like that's true. But pretty much any time that there's a superhero movie coming out, I'm excited about it. It's just, is it going to live up to my expectations? I was excited about Iron Man 3, but it just didn't do it for me. And I still need to see Thor 2 from last year.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I like the first Thor a lot.
Yeah, me too.
I fall in these movies by accident. I'm like, okay, people like this movie. I want to find out why. But I never go into it loving superheroes. Like, I don't know what it is. I've just never liked... I liked him as a kid, but I feel like my love for him has kind of waned.
Waned, yeah.
Yeah, and I like it when I'm surprised by, like, a good superhero story. Like, when they do the story well and I connect with it. Because I'm like, oh, that's... You can appeal to both audiences, like fanboys and people who aren't fanboys.
Yeah, yeah. And you usually wouldn't expect it to be
as
relevant. What did you mean? So besides that, I also have The Good Dinosaur, which is the next Pixar film coming out. This one seems kind of interesting because it's the first non-sequel since, I guess, Up, probably. Because they had Cars 2 and then they had The Monsters University. Toy Story 3, all those have come out since then. Mm-hmm. It's co-directed by Bob Peterson, who also co-directed Up. And I thought Up had its issues, I think, pacing-wise and things like that, but it was a really good adventure film. And so if I'm going to see a movie with dinosaurs, I want to see a good adventure film, I think. So.
Yeah, I thought Up was pretty good. I was impressed by it.
Well, the first 10 minutes are like one of the most... Everyone knows
intense.
How depressing the...
Yeah.
Lovingly depressing the first 10 minutes are.
Yeah.
And then lastly, for blockbuster films, I have Muppets Most Wanted, which is most of the same team. The only people who are not coming back to the second film are Jason Segel and Amy Adams. But it has the same director, same writer, the guy from Flight of the Conchords, Brett.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of his last name, but he's back to do some of the songs.
Good.
So it should have decently the same feel. This time around, Ricky Gervais and Tina Fey are going to be kind of filling out the cast. So I'm interested. I really like the first Muppets. I think there are a lot of haters out there. But
yeah, there were a lot of haters on that movie. I feel like it's because... they had so much expectations and nostalgia for, like, the old Muppet movies.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a new generation taking on the Muppet movies. And I liked it.
I think too many people went into the first Muppets film, like, expecting their childhood to be raped.
Yeah.
So it's just like, come on, guys.
I feel like they should have just gone in and like had fun, and the movie was fun. Like I, it wasn't bad.
It's a fun movie, yeah. And this one is to be interesting because it's supposed to be more of a caper film, which I believe goes back to some of the older Muppet films.
Yeah, and I remember the trailer's funny. If you have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, I won't spoil anything, but like
no trailer spoilers. Okay.
I feel like if you're gonna do a caper movie with Muppets, this is the way to do it.
This March, the world's most dangerous criminal has a lot in common with the world's most famous frog.
It's not easy being mean.
Constantine, the world's most dangerous frog, has escaped.
Check this out.
Oh, look, it's Kermit.
Ah! What did you do with Kermit?
There must be some mistake. I'm Kermit the Frog. What are you doing? I'm not Constantine.
You're going to be here a while.
All right, so hit me with this year. I want to go see some films in the art house.
Yeah.
Where do I go, Keith?
Well, some of the big name art house directors, like David Fincher's got a movie called Gone Girl coming out. I don't know anything about the story. I haven't read the book, but I love Fincher. And like, Fincher's had some up and downs, but he's really stayed consistently good. Like, even movies that I wasn't blown away by, like Zodiac, I can still say, like, that was a well-structured, interesting movie. And I love...
Social Network.
Yeah, Social Network. Yeah, I thought that was great. I don't know if it says a ton about Facebook, but it was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great movie.
Yeah.
And actually, recently I've heard a lot of people kind of returning back to Zodiac and saying that it's really worth like rewatching. So
yeah,
I think I fell asleep during it when I first saw it, just to be blatantly honest, but I would like to go back and rewatch it at some point. I think
I need to see it again. I saw it in theaters when it came out.
Yeah, me too.
I haven't seen it since, but it was interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I feel like, so did you see Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Yeah. I would call it a good movie. I wouldn't call it great.
Mm-hmm.
There are things I love about that movie, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's a pacing thing that happened. It felt a little bit long, and maybe it could have been quicker, more action-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a problem with the book or if that's a problem of the script.
Mm-hmm.
But, I really liked... I mean, there's some things that had, like, the rape scene. I don't know how to feel about that
mm-hmm.
in that movie. Like, it was...
probably bad.
Yeah, I mean, as far as intention, I guess it achieved me feeling absolutely disgusted and horrified,
mm-hmm.
but it also felt kind of sensationalized a little bit.
Yes. Okay, I see what you're saying. Sort of like the entirety of Django Unchained.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like Fincher was like, I'm going to put a rape scene and make you feel horrible about it, but it's also there to kind of shock you a little bit.
Mm.
And I don't know. I mean, he's done stuff like that in the past with Seven.
Mm, yeah, definitely. I think I'm interested in David Fincher, but I guess I feel like I don't expect much from him. So he's made some of my favorite movies, like Fight Club and Social Network. I definitely like both of those. But then there are other ones. I even like Seven quite a bit, but then there are other ones that I just am not that interested in. Like he's done stuff before that I just wasn't super into. So it's more just, you know, kind of wait and see. I'm going to wait and watch.
If there's a video on YouTube, they did the scenes of Fight Club without Tyler Durden, so they cut him out like digitally, and then it's just Edward Norton talking to himself.
Uh-huh.
It's really like weird and hilarious. You can find that online.
What's your good at?
So there's other stuff like Inherent Vice. That's the big one I think for both of us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm definitely into that one.
Yeah. So what's your favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie?
It's really hard to say for me. I think simply enjoyably, like the one that I enjoy the most would probably be Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Obviously towards the end of that movie it's much less enjoyable, but that movie just consistently, I can just put it on and have it in the background, and there's so many awesome scenes in that film. But I think the one that I think he's doing the most interesting things in is probably Punch Drunk Love. But I like all of his films. I mean, that's what's amazing about him is that from what I've seen so far, I haven't been disappointed in any of his movies.
Yeah.
So that's why this is so exciting. Plus Thomas Pynchon being involved. He's adapting the Thomas Pynchon book, Inherent Vice.
Has anybody ever done a Pynchon film before this?
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
If they did, Pynchon's just so crazy with how sporadically his thoughts move from thing to thing. And I haven't actually read Inherent Vice. I'd like to read it before the film comes out, but I assume it's probably in that same style. I'm reading Vineland right now, and it's very much stream of consciousness. So how you take that and put it into a movie,
yeah,
it's very interesting.
It's very interesting.
One thing I love about Pynchon is that his scenes just jump all over the place. Like, the way a usual writer would take a few paragraphs to describe characters driving from one side to the next,
yeah.
Pynchon would be like, they flew down the road and we're at this place. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that, just like that snap. So I wonder how he's going to convey that through film. It just should be interesting.
It's either going to be a mess or it's going to be great.
I bet. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of worried about setting my expectations too high, but I feel pretty confident in the PTA.
I mean, even a movie that I didn't love, The Master, I know you liked it a lot, I didn't love it, but I can still respect the stuff that was happening and be like, even though that's lesser Paul Thomas Anderson, that's beyond most all directors out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's pretty good. My favorite is probably There Will Be Blood, and I love Boogie Nights is second, and Magnolia is probably third. Yeah, I haven't seen Punchdrunk Love though, so
we'll watch someone
may change it
for sure.
So let's run through a few more. Do you have any other ones you want to talk about?
Only Livers Left Alive is the new Jim Jarmusch film.
Okay,
it's a vampire movie, but I think he's focusing more on the immortality and the loneliness of that, rather than like some steamy human vampire relationship kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be an interesting side to take, like almost trying to suck the romanticism out of vampires that we've been placing in them lately. Like,
yeah,
I couldn't imagine living forever. That's one of the
that's my nightmare.
One of, like, the most frightening things.
People who talk about immortality, I'm like, that is my nightmare.
How would you? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, life is good because it is fleeting and is only here for a period of time.
Yeah, and it's got Tilda Swinton, right?
Tilda Swinton. Yeah. I'm not sure who else is in the film, but it got pretty good reviews, I believe, at Tribeca.
Okay.
It premiered it, I believe. So
I love Tilda Swinton. I would honestly marry her. Like, if she asked me, I'd be like, sure, I will do whatever you want.
I don't know if I'd marry her, but she's definitely a good actress. She was really good in the George Clooney film, Michael Clayton.
Yeah,
I call it George Clooney. I think someone else might have directed
George Clooney
that
film.
Anyway, so I'm excited about that. You mentioned Inherent Vice. Besides that, T-Mal, Terrence Malick, he has anywhere from 1 to 5 movies coming out this year potentially.
Yeah.
The one that actually has a title, I believe, is Knight of Cups, which has a Christian Bale in it. I know he was also seen around Austin shooting some film about the local music scene, which is super intriguing to me. That might be next year, and we might not even see Knight of Cups this year. He hasn't shown anything in any of the festivals yet.
Yeah.
So there's a potential that this could end up in 2015, but I have high hopes that it shows up this year, and I'm kind of interested to see him go back to hopefully a less navel-gazing.
Yeah.
I really liked To the Wonder. I thought it was a great movie, but it resides in a certain place. I'm not just going to throw that movie on, and I don't enjoy it nearly as much as I do Tree of Life or a lot of his other films.
Yeah.
To the Wonder was just a little bit too navel-gazing for me.
Yeah, I heard he had filmed at Fun Fest with what's his name, who's in Top Gun.
Ryan Gosling, or who's in Top Gun, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's the guy opposite of Tom Cruise.
I don't know that character's name. There's Val Kilmer as well.
Val Kilmer.
Gotcha. Yeah. Right.
But he, I saw the footage of him filming that, and it's supposed to be like a burnout rock star guy, and it just follows his life and after he's hit his fame and what happens to him. So I'm curious about that. I mean, I know you love T-Mal a lot.
Yeah, big T-Mal fan.
I'm just curious about it. I'm like, I hope you make something good. We'll see.
Yeah. So he's like your Fincher. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I'll talk about one real quick. I think we're both Linklater fanboys at this point.
Yes,
and
definitely so.
Probably one of the most interesting projects in a long time out there called Boyhood.
Yep.
And he's been filming it for how many years? Like 13, 20?
Yeah, 12 or 13 or so.
Yeah, and he's followed this group of actors. He goes back every 5 or 6 years. I can't remember the dates, but he goes back and he films scenes with them, and it's just about them changing as they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's about boyhood and how you change, and that's interesting. Like,
yeah, and I believe Ethan Hawke. I believe Ethan Hawke is playing the father in the film.
Yeah.
And I was reading a short little, interview with him where he was saying how interesting it was to come back and play that character and leave him and then come back 5 years later, and it was just like nothing he'd ever done before.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, it's at least an interesting experiment. It should be a different viewing experience.
Linklater seems to love time.
Like, yeah, yeah. It's basically the before movie is like shoved into one film.
Yeah. I think he just loves... It's like part documentary, part fiction.
Yeah.
Like, uh-huh. He just loves seeing how it would play out in real life, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's sort of that's the kind of thing that like a beginner filmmaker probably couldn't get away with, you know? So it's nice to see somebody who has that ability is actually doing it and trying to be inventive instead of just, you know, shitting out something else.
How would you pitch that movie? It'd be like, yeah. I want to get these actors, and every 6 years we're going to film, and you need to give me money.
Yeah, I need money right now. You'll get your product 12 years from now,
yeah.
And it's going to be good, I swear.
Trust me.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it didn't, not to get sidetracked, but the director with Ryan Gosling about the relationship, Blue Valentine.
Blue Valentine, mm-hmm.
Yeah, he tried to do that. He wanted to keep it there for like a year or 6 months or whatever, and, like, as they changed through the relationship, but that's just weird.
Wasn't gonna fly.
Okay, so anything else you
want to... I got God Help the Girl, which is a musical film that's written and directed by Stuart Murdoch, who's the lead singer and songwriter of Belle and Sebastian.
Wow.
So to me, like, I guess the first thing that popped in my head was like a musical Wes Anderson film.
Yeah.
The movie has premiered at Sundance and is getting pretty good reviews, and I'm hearing that it's he has a very unique vision, so that should be interesting. There's also, you know, people have their issues with the film. It's his first movie. This isn't necessarily his career. Like, he's a musician by trade.
Yeah.
But I'm still really interested in it. So I guess the big hope is that it actually gets picked up by a distributor. Because a lot of the things that show up at Sundance don't end up getting picked up. So hopefully the rest of us get to see it somehow, even if it's on streaming or something like that, versus, you know, actually in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, and I love Belle and Sebastian. I like the music a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, like, somebody who writes those lyrics and those that kind of song, like, the tone of those songs,
mm-hmm.
like, how that would translate to a movie, so...
Yeah, it should be interesting.
Maybe it'll be totally different. Maybe, like, it'll be something completely different from Belle and Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
So, Midnight Special, director John Nichols, or no?
Jeff Nichols.
Jeff Nichols, yeah. He's done movies we both like. The last one was Mud.
Mm-hmm. And I was a big fan of his first movie, Shotgun Stories.
Yeah, yeah. And my favorite out of his is Take Shelter, except for the last 20 minutes. Like, the ending, I didn't love, but I
have to watch this one.
The thing I love about that director is he knows how to, like, set tone and really make psychological characters. Like, he knows how to bring out the psychology of a character.
Mm-hmm.
And especially he sets it all in the South, so that's pretty good too.
Yeah.
So we got other stuff we can run through real quick. You want to talk about anything?
Last one I was going to mention was a film called Lanto, and actually just in general, some of the films coming out this year by, I guess, Mumblecore directors. Aaron Katz has a film, Lanto, which I was about to mention. He did a film a few years back called Dance Party USA that was really good. And he's directing this film with Martha Stevens. It's about two elderly guys who are friends, but they sort of drifted apart over the years.
Huh.
And apparently they get stuck in Iceland for some reason. But they basically sort of rekindle their friendship. And it just sounds like it's a movie about faded friendships, which are pretty interesting to me. So, you know, just another character piece kind of movie. Joe Swansburg also has a movie coming out this year.
Lars von Trier is coming out with Nymphomaniac, which is an insanely long 4 hours.
Yeah.
Split into two different movies.
Mm.
And it's got Charlotte Gainsborough, is that how you say it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Singer. Lars von Trier seems to love getting her naked. Like,
yeah.
That's his goal.
Yeah.
For his later movies. But it's basically about a woman who has a sexual past that's really complicated. And it's about the partner she's with and other things. And from what I hear, like, it's supposed to be good, but it's also 4 hours. Like,
mm-hmm.
a 4 hour movie. Imagine that.
4 hour sexathon.
Yeah. Sexathon for 4 hours. And I like Lars von Trier in part. I don't like his comments that he made, but I like Dogville, and Melancholia was really
good.
Yeah,
Melancholia was amazing. Last one I mentioned is Lynn Shelton. That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Lynn Shelton's got a new movie. She was the director of Hump Day and Your Sister's Sister. She's got one coming out called Laggies, so that should be interesting.
Budapest Hotel.
Budapest also, Hotel. Yeah. Yeah. That's the last one.
That's the last one, yeah.
Why do you want to be a lobby boy?
Who wouldn't? At the Grand Budapest, sir.
And so my life began. Junior lobby boy in training under the strict command of Monsieur Gustave H. Many of the hotel's most valued and distinguished guests came for him.
I love you.
I love you. She was dynamite in the sack, by the way.
She was 84.
I've had older.
This was also when I met Agatha.
She's charming. She's so charming.
Is he flirting with you?
Yes.
I approve of this union.
I became his pupil, and he was to be my counselor and guardian.
The police are here.
Tell them I'll be right down.
Are you worried about that one?
No, I enjoy the director's movies, and I always go in and expecting, like, center frame shots and quirkiness. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go in...
And that's what you'll get.
Yeah, that's what you're going to get. And he's never made me want to walk out or hate his movies, so I expect to enjoy it.
But I guess my issue is that I felt like with his last film, I felt like Wes Anderson sort of reached the pinnacle of what he could do with that style.
Yeah.
So I sort of expected for him to move on from there. Nope. And seeing the trailer, just like, oh, he's doing that thing again over and over again. But I don't know. It could be good. I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, I guess, maybe.
He's the Michael Bay of precious indie films.
Yeah.
Like, he's got his patterns, and he just follows those patterns.
But I'm ready for his painting game, man. Where's his painting game?
His painting game is going to be like, I don't know, a Terrence Malick film.
Yeah, Wes Anderson, where is your painting game? That's a question.
When we come back, we'll be wrapping up the episode with a game and a special guest. This, of course, is Belle and Sebastian with Expectations. You can find out more about them at bellandsebastian.com.
Monday morning, wake up knowing that you gotta go to school. Tell your mum what to expect, she says it's right out of the blue. Do you wanna work at Debenhams, cause that's what they expect. Start in lingerie, and Doris is your supervisor.
Alright, so for our game, we are joined by my wife, Rachel Manning. Rachel, you wanna tell everybody about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Rachel Manning. I have a blog, website, Connectivite. You can visit me there at www.connectivite.com.
Now, what does the www stand for? Is that...
World Wide Web.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, cool. So we're going to be playing a game. What I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be telling you guys three films.
Hey, Matt, what's a game?
No. A game? Hey. I'm going to be giving you guys three films, and I'm going to give you a description of the film, or the title of the film, and a description or a log line. A log line is what they call it in the Hollywoods.
Yeah.
Which is basically what people give when they're trying to sell their script or pitch it, is a log line. So here we go. All right, I'm going to try to, they're kind of categorized a tiny bit, a little bit here. So here we go. First, round one, fight.
Fight.
Ooh. All right, so the first film. This is a game. This is time to sleep. All right, so the first film is called Ninja Slack.
What?
The logline is, three stoners are given the powers of ninjas, but their slacker lifestyles keep them from excelling. When their house is attacked by robbers, they have to answer the call of ninja. Okay.
I would watch that movie.
Okay, cool. Good to hear. The second one is called Knights of Badassdom. Three best friends and dedicated live-action role players take to the woods to reenact a Dungeons & Dragons-like scenario as a live-action role-playing game, fresh out of the mythical Middle Ages. Hmm. Trouble arises after they unwittingly conjure up some serious evil in the form of a bloodlusting succubus from the pits of hell.
Whoa.
Okay, so far we got Ninja Slack, Stoners, Stoner Ninjas, and Knights of Badassdom. Okay?
Okay.
Third film is 3 Days to Kill. A dying Secret Service agent is offered one last assignment. While he accepts in the hopes of retirement and medical treatment, he also tries to reconnect with his estranged daughter.
I would probably watch that one also. I mean,
okay.
So are we supposed to say which one we think is...
It's fake.
Is fake. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Only one of them is fake.
I made one of them up. Which one do you think I made up?
Knights of Badassdom.
Okay, Keith?
I think Knights of Badassdom might be real. I'm going to say Ninja Slack, just because it's too awesome.
All right. Keith was actually right. There is a movie called Knights of Badassdom, and it looks so terrible. It has Peter Dinklage in it, too.
Oh,
it looks real bad. Everyone at home needs to immediately go to Wikipedia and check out this movie's poster. It looks terrible.
Terrible.
Yes. Thank you. I'm glad you like Ninja Slack.
That was
a film idea I came up with a few weeks ago.
You should do that.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Nice try, love.
Good job, okay. Wife. Good job, love. No, just kidding.
All right. Round two. Fight. This film is called The Green Inferno. Hmm. A group of student activists travel from New York City to the Amazon to save a dying tribe, but crash in the jungle and are taken hostage by the very natives they protected. Dun, dun, dun. Second film is entitled Deliver Us From Evil. Ralph Sarchi, a New York cop, meets a renegade priest when he is pulled into a case which the priest convinces him is demonic related. Together they work to solve the case and combat the paranormal forces working against them.
I have no idea.
The third film is called This Is How It Ends. And this found footage film, a secret seance among teenage outcasts, brings about the end of days. Can they atone for their sins in time to make things right, or will their hearts blacken with the rest of the world?
I got nothing.
Oh, I'm stumped.
You guys have to pick one.
This is tough.
So you want to go first?
I say This Is How It Ends.
Okay. Keith?
I'm going to do The Green Inferno. Something about that...
You're wrong. Okay, Rachel, yeah. Good job.
Good job. Good job.
The Green Inferno is actually a film being shot by the guy who did Hostage and all those films. Or Hostel, not Hostage.
Oh, really?
Hostel. I think Roth, right?
Yeah, so it's like
Tim Roth,
torture porn kind of thing.
Yeah, it's torture porn.
Okay.
And Deliver Us From Evil sounds like the worst movie I've ever heard of. Yeah. But it is coming up. It is really a film.
I was like, I wouldn't watch that movie.
All right, that's 1 point for Wifey.
Yay!
Also known as Rachel. She does have a name.
Or Even.
All right, Even Stevens. Here's the last one. Okay, so... This is a really long one. This is either me being creative or someone on Wikipedia getting a little bit nutty. Round three, fight.
Go.
This first one was called Heaven Is For Real. It's a Christian family film. Heaven Is For Real is a story of a four-year-old son of a small-town Nebraska pastor who experienced heaven during emergency surgery. He talked about looking down to see the doctor operating and his dad praying in the waiting room. The family didn't know what to believe, but soon the evidence was clear.
That's terrible.
In heaven, Colton met his miscarried sister, whom no one ever had told him about, and his great-grandfather, who died 30 years before Colton was born. He shared impossible to know details about each. Colton went on to describe the words that only Jesus could write about how really big God and his chair are and how the Holy Spirit shoots down power from heaven to help us. Told by Colton's father, often in Colton's own words, guys, but there are people who will not believe Colton or his family. The disarmingly simple message is that heaven is a real place, Jesus really loves children, and to be ready, there's a coming lost battle. Last battle.
Miscarried sister.
I know,
what's
seriously.
Happening?
But the best part is Jesus really loves children right next to there's a coming last battle. That is Christianity.
Yeah.
That, like, encompasses it.
We like kids, but everybody's going to hell.
Yeah, exactly. And I might have written that one. Okay, cool. The second film is called The Ghosts of Pembroke Station. An animated feature about three ghosts who live in Pembroke Station and happen to catch a ride on a train that is hijacked. They must put an end to their wacky hijinks in order to stop the evil hijacker. Alright, the third film is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The turtles... here's the log line.
Okay.
The turtles are back ready to kick some show with a new attitude for the information age. When the pizza baron shows up in town to buy out all of New York's best pizza joints and hike up the price... The turtles have to answer in ninja fashion. It's time for the turtles to take on the 1%.
Oh my god.
Which one is the real film? Or is which one is the fake film?
So actually? Can I ask a question before we do it?
Yes.
So is this a scenario where the title could be real but the log line is not real?
Keith, I believe you have caught my bluff.
Damn it.
So I will say yes, that is potentially correct.
I'm sorry.
Teenage Ninja Turtles?
So the Christian film is real?
I don't know. You got to pick one. Which one's that? Which one's not an actual movie?
You want to go, Rachel?
Yeah, I say Turtles.
Okay, Keith.
I'm gonna actually say the Ghost of Pembroke Station. I'm interested, but I don't know if that's real.
I'm interested.
I don't know if it's real.
Keith is right. Yeah, there is a Turtles movie. There is a Turtles movie coming out, though I did make up the log line.
Oh, okay.
Because there was... Wouldn't that be tricky. Awesome, though? I want to see the Turtles take on the 1%.
That's not totally fair in my opinion.
But Keith did ask.
So we both won. So we're tied.
So, yeah,
wait,
that's true.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, you have two, and I have one.
I thought we both had one.
You both had one, and then you just won that one.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Well, I mean, yeah, okay, so...
Haram.
Okay. That was a good game, though. Like, I'm impressed with the detail. Like,
well, thanks, sir.
Yeah, you good. Put some effort
in. So you guys would watch The Ghost of Pembroke Station?
No. No.
It would depend on what
it's
happens.
It's like a really twisted Miyazaki film. Or
I like the idea of a kids movie having a hijacking in it.
Yeah.
That made me happy.
Everyone will die.
Well, cool. Did you get... Yeah, this is actually a movie. Heaven is for Real is a movie. It's coming out.
We should watch that. We should review
very
that.
Disturbing.
Heaven
there is
brutal.
A coming last battle.
How do, I wonder how they're going to show the miscarried sister. I just can't get
like,
that out of my mind.
A baby.
Are they going to show the
Whoever wrote this description on Wikipedia doesn't know how to write a description for a film. It just... it. If this is really how the movie is, it would be such a mess.
It's terrible.
Such a wonderful mess. Alright guys, well thanks for playing the game. I really appreciate it. Rachel Manning.
All
thank
right.
you. Oh, thank you very much.
Peace
Tom.
Out everybody. Thanks for having
wait,
me.
Wait, last plug your website one more time.
Yes.
ConnectaByte.
And what do you do there?
I write about the connection between food and the way you live.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well thanks for coming on, Rachel.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it.
Yes. We will hopefully do this again in the future.
More games. More games to come. Cool.
Absolutely.
That'll do it for another episode of the Film Fringe Podcast. We hope you tune back in 2 weeks to check out our review of the indie hit from last year, Short Term 12, as well as Noah Baumbach's first film, Kicking and Screaming. Lastly, we'll be discussing some of our favorite films from the recently departed Philip Seymour Hoffman. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Rachel Manning, for coming on the show. You can check out her writings at connectabyte.com. We'd also like to give a shout out to our soul brother, Dennis Harvey, for letting us use his song Geronimo for our theme. Thanks, guys, and when you're looking to the stars, keep it fringy.
Jesus, we're the children, and to be ready, there's a coming lost battle.